broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network. This is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Welcome to this edition of Cultural Baggage. Here in just a moment, we'll have our guest for the evening, the editor of the new, highly revamped High Times Magazine, Mr. Steve Bloom. Poppygate Report will be in this Sunday's 420 Drug War News Report. Well, the buds are back, and so says High Times Magazine and its editor, our guest for this evening, Mr. Steve Bloom. Can you hear me, Steve?
I can, Dean. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back.
Well, yes, indeed. We had you on just almost a year ago, if I recall.
I think so.
Yes, sir. When last we talked, you guys had cloned the Grow America magazine, but we're going back to the original now. We're going back to High Times. Tell us about that, please.
Well, as of this year, 2005, and we started last year, 2004, towards the end of the year, we started to revamp the magazine back to the format that people expect High Times to be, a marijuana magazine. And the year of 2004, we tried something different, and it wasn't really received very well by the readers, and we responded, so we're back. Sort of took a year off, so to speak, and we're moving ahead. We do say the buds are back, and that's the January issue, and we follow that up with next several issues. The one that's coming out right now is the Cannabis Cup Special for the March issue, and so we're sort of back to where we were, essentially, after going through some changes.
Well, I want to let the listeners out there who haven't seen the new edition, yes, indeed, the buds are back. The pictures are beautiful. The stories are compelling and highly informative. I want to congratulate you. I like what you've done, Steve.
Thanks a lot, Dean.
You betcha. Tell us about a little bit more, if you will, about the January issue here. I'm looking through it, and it's just eye candy. It's wonderful stuff, beautiful pictures.
Well, that issue features some stories about how to grow marijuana, and as you say, the beautiful photos. And we continue to do that in Grow America, a little less so in High Times in the last year. And so we just wanted to come back strong, with a marijuana focus in the magazine that, lends towards good photography and stories about how to grow marijuana, but also, has music stories and culture and politics. We had an article that was a lot of fun in the issue, Maroon 5, the pop rock band. That's one of the biggest selling rock bands out there right now. They smoked for our photographer and did a really good interview with us, and so that got us a lot of interest on the cultural side, and that's what we try to do. We try to mix it up, and we've also kind of spiced up the format of the magazine, make it just a little funnier and a little more spoofy up front in the magazine, especially, and just try and make it fresh and respond to people today. This is a different generation, the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, and High Times goes back to all those years, so we have to respond to what the new reader is looking for from us. What do they want? What information do they want? And we respond, and we read all their emails, and people want to know how to beat a drug test. People want to know where can they buy seeds. People want to know all kinds of information about growing. They also want to know where they can travel and sort of have a good time, so to speak, and how can they carry things, and not get arrested. People want to know about medical marijuana and all the different states where it's available and how successful has that been in California, and what's, where should you go and how should you do it. So we just sort of serve, the readers in that respect and give them this information that they're asking for, and we do it on the website, hightimes.com. We do it in the magazine, and we kind of separate all our coverage between the two, sort of media bases that we have, the magazine, the print magazine, and the website, the electronic version.
Now, Steve, the Cannabis Cup preview is in the January issue, and as I understand it, the full report of the 17th Cannabis Cup will be in the, is it the March issue coming out?
No, it's issued out already now. It's, it's actually just about hit newsstands. Technically probably out next week, but it's really kind of leaked out already, and it generally does. a week or so before our street date. And so we've seen around New York, the Canvas Cup issue is out. And the only thing that's probably different about this year's Cup issue, besides just the overall quality coverage and photos, is that it's in March, which is earlier than we've done in any issue in the past. We came back from the Cup this year and really jammed it out. And previously, we had the Cannabis Cup issue in May and then moved it to April. And then this year, we just moved it to March. We didn't want anybody to beat our coverage of our own event. And so we do, you know, 15 pages or more in the magazine on the Cup. So it's great. And then that same issue, the one that's coming out, with we balance that off with music coverage. We do a tribute to Bob Marley, who would have been 60 this year. There'll be a lot of celebrations around that in February. And we always, you know, look for some unique Bob Marley angle and focus that we can find every year, really, but at least every couple of years, you know, around this sort of February celebration. And we do it in the March issue, which is out during February. This year, we excerpted photos from Kate Simon's amazing book that she just put out called Rebel Music, and did a feature story from that book, as well as did, like, more or less an abridged version of the original Bob Marley interview in High Times in 1976. And just great photos throughout, 6 pages on that. So you got the Cup, 12 pages, a big centerfold, and then Bob Marley, and then wrapped around that, you have the front of the book, which sort of news and, you know, mixture of, you know, all kinds of stories, in the back, which is a little bit more grow technique, and what we call a section in the back called Know Your Rights, which is, you know, legal questions. We have a section called Busted Letters, the Drug Test, and the Normalizer, which is a column that the normal people write, and Freedom Fighter of the Month, who we select somebody who's done something really, you know, important over, you know, during some period of time, you know, working on some sort of campaign, or somebody who's, you know, just, you know, a leader out there trying to change the laws. So I don't know, we just do this all on a monthly basis, but we freshened it up, and I really it's exciting. I've worked with the magazine since 1988, and I've seen, you know, some changes here over time, but I feel like, you know, we're as fresh as we've been in a long time.
I had a musical guest on back during the holiday season. They were in studio. Guy Schwartz and the New Jack Hippies, they and Carol in Wonderland, went to the Netherlands back, I guess, in November. Did a little musical tour over there and certainly toured the coffee shops. And they talked about the fact that it's just nothing like in America. The freedom to sit and enjoy a good smoke and to sit with friends and know that you're not going to get hassled by the man. Has it been your experience? Have you gotten to go to these cannabis cups as well?
Yeah, I've been to the last 7 cups, and so I go to Amsterdam at least once a year. I love it. It's kind of like a retreat. You know, you can just breathe, you know, differently, and you could just, you know, get a little healthier, where you just don't feel that, you know, you're under this sort of constant, you know, duress, you know, when, you know, you're being treated as a criminal for smoking pot. And over there, it's just so normal. You just go into the local coffee shop, which is kind of like / bar, because a lot of these places sell beer and maybe some alcohol, but for the most part, you know, you use coffee, juice, beer, whatever, and you sit there and you smoke, and it's just such a normalized thing that they do there. And when I was just there last, I had the chance to do that a little bit more than usual, where I normally go over there and I work the event, and I'm kind of like, you know, tied to, you know, helping organize and run things. And this year I didn't do that, and I just sort of went a little bit more as a High Times editor, you know, went around to the shops to meet people and just, you know, schmooze a little bit and just, you know, enjoy the place in general in a way that I don't usually have the time, more a little more leisurely. And I was able to do that and just, you know, go over to my favorite place. The place I love to go to is the Dolphin. It's in the Lidza Plain section, and the Roker Eye is there too. And the Dolphin, I just seem to run into people I knew a little bit more, and I like the location. It was very close to where I was staying, and so I kept going there. It was like a little central place for me to meet people and then you see where I go next. It was so much fun. I mean, Amsterdam is just such a great place. I mean, in so many ways, even if pot wasn't legal, I mean, there are so many more progressive policies. You know, they have gay marriage, they have euthanasia, you know, they have clean needles, they have smart shops on the street where you can buy mushrooms. You know, they just have so many things there that, you know, here is frowned upon. And, you know, it's sad. It's sad that, you know, the country that, you know, in a lot of ways has a lot to do with the forming of the United States, you know, the Holland, or the Netherlands, the Dutch, you know, they, you know, have had such an impact on the United States in a lot of ways, as much as the Brits, much as England, you know, really, when you think about it, and yet, you know, we can't sort of think, you know, alike at this point in time, you know, when it comes to, you know, a sort of sane public policies. And those are the ones that matter to me the most, especially marijuana, but, you know, other you know, they tell you where you can, they give you the understanding that you can make these changes and it can be implemented, but maybe in a smaller country it's easier, I don't know. I don't think the United States will follow the formula of what is succeeding in Holland. I think it'll be different here. I think it'll be much more of a commercial system when marijuana is legalized, and there'll be money to go around for everybody, and it won't be just, you know, little shops all over the place, and that's how they decided to do it, with very small quantities being moved around. So, you know, I don't think that'll be the case here, but I, you know, I think it will take some time before we'll ever see commercial marijuana in the U.S.
Well, Steve, I started my time as a drug reformer, as a marijuana, sacramental marijuana advocate. And as time went by and I educated myself, I just kept stepping a little further until I stand for the regulation of all drugs to adults. And I was really thrilled with one of the articles in the March issue, the look at the DEA museum.
Right.
And what they're trying to do there with to demonize those who use drugs, and the write-up, the pictures are beautiful, but the content of that went along with this story is just wonderful. You guys nailed it right on the head.
Oh, great. I'll tell Dave Bienenstock, who wrote that. I was my co-editor of the magazine, how much you like it. You know, I mean, this is just such a ridiculous notion that, you know, drugs, you know, cause terrorism or lead to or work hand in hand with. And, you know, I mean, it's sort of a desperation move. You know, a lot of what the government does about marijuana especially is kind of desperation. I mean, they want to say drugs, fine, but they want to want marijuana in there too. You know, is that really true? You know, where is marijuana really influencing, you know, any type of terrorist, you know, movement in, around the world? I mean, where, in the Philippines or something? I mean, where, you know, if you tell me, you know, Colombia? Is that what they're doing? They're growing pot and they're, you know, getting arms? I don't think so, you know?
No.
So, I mean, so where is the logic of this statement? You know, but then on the other side, you know, we just basically say, well, that's a good enough reason to grow your own or to buy domestic or to try and, you know, and we're not opposed to, you know, foreign marijuana coming into the U.S., but in the way it has to come here, you know, sometimes it doesn't come in the best condition. And so we kind of rather, you know, get something, you know, that would be a little higher grade. We could do it ourselves here in the U.S., so we don't really need to count on a lot of this foreign, you know, marijuana.
Well, the one quote I see if I can recall that was in that story, that it's patriotic to grow your own, and I would tend to agree with that.
Well, if you want to say it that way, it's fine. I mean, it's sensible, you know, in a lot of ways. The only thing that's not sensible is having to hide doing it, you know, and each person who does it is under, you know, a certain kind of stress that only the person who does it knows. So, and everybody takes that differently, you know, handles it and works with it and keeps it private in certain ways. And so, you know, you put yourself in a different strata when you do that. You're more legal than you are just buying pot from somebody. I mean, you're really, you know, a little more involved with it. And so you're taking more of a risk and all that. And as long as it's illegal, you know, people are going to be somewhat reluctant, even though they want to. You know, they'll try. You know, they'll give it their best shot. I mean, obviously, prohibition has created a whole generation of gardeners, of people who probably never would have grown, you know, marijuana in their life if it was illegal. They wouldn't have had to. So people, you know, sort of, you know, took it upon themselves to become, you know, botanists, and, you know, they're breeding marijuana.
Geneticists, indeed.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. I mean, and Michael Pollan, you know, wrote about it in the New York Times years ago, amazed at, you know, the advanced techniques in horticulture that marijuana, you know, growers, you know, are involved with. And so we document that, of course, in High Times. We're part of that. You know, we kind of maybe started that in a lot of ways because, you know, the whole language around marijuana and the growing of it never really existed until High Times started doing, you know, extensive coverage in the mid-80s. So we've been there, you know, from the beginning on so many things. Medical marijuana was in our first issue in 74. I don't have to toot our horn for things, but it just, you know, sometimes we want to make sure people know, you know, what our role has been. We were writing about hemp years ago. We, you know, just sort of a bit ahead of the curve, generally speaking. So I think we're moving in a good direction. I feel that, you know, even though it's a conservative time, I obviously we await the Supreme Court decision on the Reich case. That'll impact heavily on medical availability and being able to, you know, not be arrested for growing or possessing if you're a medical patient, generally, you know, throughout the country. So that's huge. And we're, you know, hoping, you know, for a good result on that. And if not, you know, keep just, you know, hammering away on every front, you know, to change the laws on marijuana.
Now, I look at the issue, the 350th issue. Let's talk a little bit about the history. Exactly when did High Times get its feet?
1974. It was an outgrowth of an underground press syndicate that Tom Frasad, the founder of High Times, was doing, and he wanted to have a magazine. He felt the time was right, and he looked at Playboy and saw Playboy as a model for a magazine about a subject that's somewhat taboo. This subject was marijuana and maybe broader, you know, in a broader sense, drugs. He created a magazine, called High Times. It came out quarterly, then it came out bi-monthly, and then it went annual in 76. His years at High Times, he had 5 years at High Times, then he passed away in 78, were just dynamic. Those years, those issues are just phenomenal in every way. Susan Sontag just passed away. She was interviewed in High Times back in the 70s. And we just covered a lot of territory back then. We're maybe a little broader than we are today. Their focus was the smuggler and that, you know, romanticism around, you know, going out of the country to bring the marijuana back. And all those great stories, and that's what Tom Frasad was. He was a smuggler as well as a media maven, a mogul. He went to Colombia quite a bit and brought back marijuana, and he basically funded everything with that. And that was his thing. And so he's quite the adventurer, and almost a swashbuckler, you know, of the period, you know, has, you know, kind of a wild reputation in the office back then of being, you know, kind of want things done a certain way, and he wasn't happy with that, you know, you're in trouble. And yet it was a big party in the office, and there was every imaginable drug available, and you know, those are the stories we hear. I started here in 88, and it's always been a fun place, but it's not quite that, you know, idea. But that's the 70s, and, you know, High Times, you know, sprang out of that period. I mean, you know, Saturday Night Live, you know, started in 75. High Times started in 74, and we're out of that period, you know, that was sort of like post-60s counterculture. You know, where, you know, there was a growth of the counterculture that was evolving out of the 60s. And High Times is one of those elements that came through that, you know, got caught up in that wave. And very natural and organically, you know, came together. And the first magazine about this subject, and then it just, you know, it's continued on until today, just like an SNL, you know, where an SNL has, you know, gone through whatever its ups and downs. People like it more certain times and less other times. And it's more dynamic of a show at times than others, and you know, maybe the magazine's a little like that too, going through the changes societally and the flow of employees and staffers, and you know, who, you know, has generated the most energy and the most life for the magazine over, you know, a fairly long period now. So it's an interesting, you know, flow. But basically, from the time that, you know, went from the 70s into the 80s, High Times, you know, kind of was more rocky waters, I think, even financially, during the Just Say No, you know, 80s era. And we came out of that pretty well, you know, sort of adapting to a sort of a new generation of people who are coming up smoking pot and interested in the magazine again, and sort of create a new audience sort of jumping aboard in the late 80s and early 90s. And then I think through the Clinton era, you know, even though Clinton didn't really do too much to, you know, change the drug war or, you know, or lighten the burden on potheads, he was more permissive. His government just was more permissive. It's not like it is today under Bush. I mean, it was a little easier to sort of forge ahead with the medical marijuana, you know, movement in the 90s, I think, and it might have been a little harder to start it now. Fortunately, it started then. And similarly, you know, in the 70s, the decrim movement or decriminalizing marijuana, you know, started under Carter under a Democratic, government. So you need that to sort of help spur things along. But at the same time, just because you have a conservative government in doesn't mean that you're going to just like lay back and say, okay, we're not going to, you know, try and change the laws because you're not our friend.
You bet.
You might want to work a little harder, you know, to really counteract everything that they come up with to try and, you know, send you off track.
What, Steve Bloom, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. He is the editor of the new High Times, The Buds Are Back, and we thank you for being our guest on Cultural Baggage.
Thanks for having me, Dean.
You bet.
This is Officer Budlist, director of the Law Enforcement Academic Foundation. Today, we're here to warn the youth of America about the dangers of smoking hemp. What's hemp, you say? Well, kids, hemp is a type of cannabis grown worldwide for its fibers, which grow long and tall, but the smoking of the plant won't get you high.
That's right, Steve. Long and tall, no buzz at all.
Hey, it's Sergeant Dan Stimley. Tell us, Sergeant Stimley, is hemp just marijuana that's low in THC, the chemical that gets you high?
Not only that, Officer Budlist, but it also contains high levels of CBD, a cannabinoid which neutralizes the high. You'd have better luck getting stoned smoking a rolled-up newspaper.
Thanks for the heads up, Sergeant Dan. So remember, kids, rope isn't dope.
And long and tall, no buzz at all.
Join us next time as we learn the difference between coca and cocoa at the Law Enforcement Academic Foundation.
Deputy Director of Homeland Security, Asa Hutchinson.
Marijuana may not cause the overdose deaths like heroin, but it's just as dangerous.
For thousands of years, marijuana has been known as an appetite stimulant and for its ability to prevent nausea. It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Chest pain, dark yellow or brown urine, shortness of breath, skin rash, unusual tiredness or fatigue, headache, diarrhea or constipation, flatulence, nausea and vomiting. Time's up. The answer, Nexium, the little purple pill, another FDA-approved product.
My name's Kevin Zeese. I currently serve as president of Common Sense for Drug Policy, and I left Common Sense to work on the Nader campaign, and I served as his press secretary and wrote a lot of his position statements. I've worked in drug policy reform for over two decades.
Now, Kevin, there's a recent Supreme Court ruling that looks like we're in for some change, but just what that change is, I don't understand. Can you clarify it for us?
Yeah, it's an excellent ruling, actually. I'm glad to see they're going in this direction. My only concern really is whether Congress will try to undo the decision. They did two things in the Supreme Court decision that are very important. One, they required that for sentencing purposes, somebody can't be sentenced unless a jury is convinced that they're guilty of the allegations. In the past, people were being sentenced under the federal sentencing guidelines for activities that they were not even charged with, and even sometimes when they were acquitted. And the rationale had been that the sentencing stage does not require proof beyond reasonable doubt. So if you were acquitted, but there was a preponderance of evidence that you committed it, the judge would still sentence you for it. So that was a very important step to return power to juries and make sure people are sentenced for things they're really found guilty of. But the second part was even more important, I think. The second part took these federal sentencing guidelines, which were mandatory guidelines, where the judge had to follow the guidelines, and it turned them into voluntary guidelines, where they are advisory to the judge, so the judge can make a decision on his or her own based on the individual facts and circumstances of the case. Now, people should understand that in addition to these guidelines, these federal guidelines, there are another set of laws called mandatory sentences. These are statutory sentences based primarily on the weight of the drug. A person gets a mandatory minimum sentence, and those laws are still in place. So we're not going to see a dismantling of the harsh sentencing in federal court, but we're going to begin to see a mandatory minimum sentence, and then above that, it will be up to the judge based on the guidelines to make a decision based on the individual circumstances of the case rather than to follow these mandatory guidelines, which actually were even harsher than the mandatory sentencing statutes.
You can hear more from Kevin Zeese on Wednesday and Thursday's 420 Drug War News.
Hey, my name is Gabriel Saya, and I'm a policy analyst with the Drug Policy Alliance. The Drug Policy Alliance is the nation's largest organization working to end the war on drugs.
As I understand it, there was a recent meeting of state black caucus groups to talk about the drug war. You want to fill us in on what that was all about?
Well, sure. Every year there is a gathering of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. It was founded in 1977, and they convene once a year and discuss issues that are pertinent to that to the organization. It's individual legislators from around the country. This year, one of the resolutions that was submitted was a resolution to investigate the real cost of the war on drugs. And the significance of this, it passed unanimously during the vote. The significance of this resolution is that the NBCSL has effectively called for an end to the drug war, has come out publicly stating that they believe that it's failed completely, that it disproportionately impacts, negatively impacts African-American communities across the country, and has laid out a couple or three steps that they plan to take organizationally to change the way that states deal with the war on drugs. So the fact that this organization has come out with this resolution is fairly significant.
I've been saying it for years now, and I think it's time for you folks to please listen up.
I'm Stephen Heath. I'm with the Media Awareness Project. We're the major project for drugsense.org. We have two primary functions. The one is that we archive online as much or all of the drug news or opinion-related items to drug news from around North America and the free world. And a secondary task, in addition to archiving all that information, is to teach other people how they can use these articles to give feedback to the various newspapers and media outlets about how they feel about the topic. We are able to get drug news and opinion related to drug news out of newspapers and into an online archive on an average of about 12 hours from the time it's printed. Now, we have almost 150,000 clippings from the last 7 years, and so people, anybody that wants to go online and wants to know what's going on in different parts of the country or the world about drug news can find it easily. Now, what we're doing now in 2005 is to reach out more to the community, to our readers, and to people who are interested in this topic of drug policy and how it affects our society. And we're providing them with specialized training so that they can get printed in newspapers, either with a letter to the editor or an opinion column. And also, we're working to help them get on the air, whether it be radio time, TV time, with the idea of either a talk show or getting more news coverage in the local news, radio and television, letting the producers of these media know that this is a topic that people are interested in. Nowadays, we find reporters are more likely to understand. And what we're doing at the Media Awareness Project is we're teaching people how to contact newspapers, radio and TV, how they can stimulate more coverage of the topic. Our website, www.mapinc.org. They can contact me at Heath, H-E-A-T-H, at mapinc.org.
A quick program note for you. Next week, our guest will be Nora Callahan. She's the director of the November Coalition at November.org, and she's also the publisher of the prison advocacy magazine, Razor Wire. I want to thank Steve Nolan for being our engineer tonight. And as always, because of drug prohibition, I remind you, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network and our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Jam dancing on the edge of the